Leaders from around the world are in New York this week for the United Nations General Assembly. We've heard some of the headlines about President Trump's activities there, but we want to take a few minutes now to listen to what some of the other world leaders have been saying, starting with Gaston Alfonso Brown, the Prime Minister of Antigua and Barbuda. He described the devastation on those islands because of the recent hurricanes.
For the first time in over 300 years, there is now no permanent resident on Barbuda. The footprints of an entire civilization have been emasculated by the brutality and magnitude of Irma. Everything that meant anything to the inhabitants had to be left behind. Their homes, their possessions, their history. Indeed, everything that defines them as a society and as a people. Mercifully, Antigua, the larger of the two islands, suffered no major damage, and it could begin function normally within 48 hours. Had that not been the case, Mr. President, how we would have coped is simply beyond imagination. Overnight, Antigua's population increased by almost 3%. I know of no country that could easily cope with such an unplanned, unexpected, and unscheduled increase in its population. In addition to providing shelter and accommodation and basic necessities to the evacuated residents of Barbuda, the social services on Antigua are now under great strain. Under great strain to provide school places for an additional 600 students, medical services for the elderly, and a means of income for the able-bodied. Naturally, the residents of Barbuda are anxious to return to their homeland. But as I speak to you, the island remains unfit for human habitation. There's no electricity, no potable water, and 95% of the buildings have been destroyed or severely damaged.
The president of Guatemala also spoke. Jimmy Morales addressed migration and had a specific message for the government of the U.S. Here he is speaking through an interpreter.
Together with our partners here, we have acted to stimulate the economy and improve security so that migration can be reduced, as well as the risk faced by migrants and embarking on their dangerous journey to improve their quality of life. We therefore set much store by the endeavors of all members of the UN in negotiating a global pact for safe, regular, and orderly migration, which, as a UN mechanism, puts priority on the capacity, work, and contribution of migrants, regardless of their status. In accordance with our need to deal with our aid our fellow citizens, we have extended our consular staff in the U.S. in order to promote and protect the human rights of migrants in the U.S. and provide consular services in a way that is closer to the people. Here I wish to refer to our so-called young dreamers, who today are part of the group which contributes with its talent, knowledge, and work to the development of the communities where they live. Like other countries who have dreamers falling under the shelter of the DACA program, Guatemala hopes that the sentiment of humanity of the U.S. people and regional solidarity of the U.S. government will flourish so that over the next few months we will see the Senate passing legislation to allow this group of young people and children to enjoy legal status in the U.S.
The Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres, had harsh words for North Korea's provocative actions, but his speech also had a thinly veiled criticism of President Trump.
The use of nuclear weapons should be unthinkable. Even the threat of their use can never be condoned. But today, global anxieties about nuclear weapons are at the highest level since the end of the Cold War. And the fear is not abstract. Millions of people live under a shadow of dread cast by the provocative nuclear and missile tests of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. And within the DPRK itself, such tests do nothing to ease the plight of those who are suffering hunger and severe violations of their human rights. I condemn those tests unequivocally. And I call on the DPRK and all member states to fully comply with Security Council resolutions. Last week's unanimous adoption of Resolution 2375 tightens sanctions and sends a clear message regarding the country's international obligations. I appeal to the Council to maintain its unity. Only that unity can lead to the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula and, as the resolution recognizes, create an opportunity for diplomatic engagement to resolve the crisis. When tensions rise, so does the chance of miscalculation. Fiery talk can lead to fatal misunderstandings. The solution must be political, and this is a time for statesmanship. We must not sleepwalk our way into war.
Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani, the Emir of Qatar, used his time to criticize neighboring countries that have imposed a blockade on Qatar. Here he is speaking through an interpreter.
The blockade was imposed abruptly and without warning, prompting Qataris to consider it a kind of betrayal. It seems that those who have planned and implemented it had envisaged that their move would cause a shocking and direct impact that will bring the state of Qatar to its knees and to capitulate to a total guardianship imposed upon it. And what is worse, the blockade schemers found it necessary to rely on fabricated quotes attributed to me, which they posted on the website of Qatar News Agency after hacking it. The controlled media of these countries was ready to launch an all-out campaign of incitement prepared in advance, in which all values, morals and norms were breached, and the truth was infringed upon by a torrent of lies. Funds are still being spent unsparingly on the machine, faking and disseminating fabrications in the hope of fooling people by distorting the truth with mere lies.
One more speech we want to listen to, the Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau, who took an unusual turn in his speech to criticize his own country. He said the government of Canada had not treated the Indigenous people fairly.
There are Indigenous parents in Canada who say goodnight to their children and have to cross their fingers in the hopes that their kids won't run away or take their own lives in the night. Young Indigenous people in Canada struggle to get a good education, and though residential schools are thankfully a thing of the past, too many Indigenous youth are still sent far away, far from their families, just to get the basic education most Canadians take for granted. And far, far too many Indigenous women live in Canada a life that includes threats of violence so frequent and severe that Amnesty International has called it a human rights crisis. That is the legacy of colonialism in Canada, of a paternalistic Indian Act, of the forced relocation of Inuit and First Nations communities, and a systematic denial of Métis rights and history, of residential schools that separated children as young as 5 years old from their families, punished them for speaking their own language, and sought to extinguish Indigenous cultures entirely. The good news is that Canadians get it. They see the inequities, and they're fed up with the excuses. And that impatience gives us a rare and precious opportunity to act.
Some excerpts of speeches from the United Nations General Assembly this week.